How we doing? We are coming straight from work, hopefully not mid-surgery. You're on
He's
mute,
on
brother.
mute.
Oh, lost him.
I'm about to see a patient, so I might turn the video off.
Yeah, no problems, man. No problems at all. How are you feeling, all fed, Seth?
My gosh, what did you make us do?
What's that again?
What happened? That was horrible.
Wasn't so bad. I was a couple of moments in it. Day one's always the worst for me. I tend to be not so bad after that.
Yeah, it was this afternoon was brutal for me.
Yeah, you found that got to the worst.
Yeah. Well, the first night was bad, and then this afternoon, just all the food that was going on in my house.
No, I was lucky in the sense that because I work out of a hotel beside me, I was just sat in a room with nothing, so it was fine. That's the only way I wouldn't have been able to do it with a bunch of food around me. Matt, how are we doing, brother? You want to give me an update?
I'm great.
How are you
How's
feeling after the
walking?
weekend? How are you feeling after the weekend?
I feel good. I was a little bit sore, but I think, I don't know, we hit some really hard things, but it wasn't so much volume that I was hobbling anywhere.
Nice.
So,
Anything in
yeah.
particular that you, anything in particular that you took out of the weekend?
There's just like another level of effort that I probably haven't touched since working with Johnny in person. Which was that idea that, okay, things just slowed down and now the work begins. So get another 3 to 5. I've been failing by squeezing harder, knowing that rep range was coming to an end. It's just not the same. So it was fun to do a hard thing with a good group.
Yeah, man. No, it was good to meet you in person. Seth, got any updates for us? Any wins? I think you do.
What wins? Turned 52 week ago and just did a 3 day fast. First time I ever did that. I don't know that I'll look forward to doing it again, but it was good. It was good. I just had my first I had the best eggs and avocado just now, 15 minutes ago, of my life. My wife
Nice,
thought I
man.
was having an orgasm at the table.
Yeah, man. Like a few times I've done it in my lifetime. Anyone else here ever done really long fasts? No? I don't know. Did you get it, Seth? People always talk about like these like almost coming to Jesus moments where you get this insane clarity for a certain period of time. I don't tend to get it. I just keep getting hungrier generally.
It was like I told you, it was almost like this morning my teeth, everything felt weird. Like you were on a bender from the night before, for any of those of you who ever had that happen to you before. Just I didn't have like that moment of clarity. In fact, yesterday I was trying to do some work and literally my head was like I couldn't focus on it. But I thought I was just being a baby and drank some more electrolytes and, tried to power through.
There's a little bit of you being a baby with it, Seth, for sure. No, I don't get that. I don't get that either. Where people talk about these amazing feelings they get from long fast, man. It just doesn't hit for me. And I've tried, I did a 5 day once, and it was the same. Like it just 2 more days of suffering. That's all that I got from it. But like as Matt said, it's just nice to do hard things sometimes to show that you can. Right. Vihar, I won't annoy you at the moment. Lewis, any updates, any wins from the previous week?
Well, I just I mean, we went through it earlier today about in terms of my basically recovering better, having better leg days and all that. So, today was my day off, so I had a and it turned into a real nightmare, but that's just happenstance from the neighbors that I'm living next to. So, but all is good. You know, I had a like I said, it's like the workouts have been much better, and I really miss going, you know, to Tampa. I had such a good time the last time I went, and but you know, it's only so many times you can do it at this point.
You were missed. You were missed.
Well,
as were you, Seth.
I felt missed, you know. I felt like I was missing out on a lot. So anyway, but
it just shows our age, lads. We used to get FOMO for fear of missing out from going to parties and stuff like that. Now it's like muscle camps. You have fear of missing out from sad times. Hey,
miss
Paul,
the most.
Paul, what you got for us? How was the weekend?
Yeah, fine. Not really sorry for me at this point, just getting back into the swing of things.
Nice. What did you take from the weekend, if anything?
Probably I'm gonna go that hard at the muscle camps. I don't like people enough to ask for a spotter at the gym. And with things like the hack squat, I was starting to compensate towards the heavier reps, so probably not a good idea to do that one alone.
Yeah, for sure. It's also just trying to figure out how you can dial in for those reps, see if you can make them a little bit better. But you did a great job, man. It's nice to see. It's always nice to see people push themselves a little bit further than they think they can go. And you definitely did that. You smashed it. John?
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. I had a lot of fun pushing myself at muscle camp, and body held up well, and just finished my second workout back.
Nice, well done. Is there anything in particular you took out of the weekend?
One thing I didn't say when I was down there was how hard my glutes had to work when we were testing the planks and the... I mean, I don't think I would have gotten those times I had if you weren't there just screaming in my ear, clench those glutes, here, between the hold on the glute ham raise and the planks.
No, man, it was good. It was a good weekend.
John, I have to say, I showed my wife a video of Greg and Dan on the leg press, and she was like, "That guy's jacked." She was talking about you.
Oh, thanks.
There you go, John. That's your compliment for the day. Done. Chris, what's going on?
Not much. Quads finally stopped aching. I had to limp through the airport to 2 days later. But yeah. Other than that, all was good. It was great. Great seeing everybody. Great hanging out with those coaches again. Yeah.
It was a good weekend, man. And
it was fantastic, the whole thing. You guys, I mean, I don't know. You guys are like world class, top notch, and feel sorry for people who have like other trainers, you know?
Much appreciated. That's a lovely thing to say. The guys, I won't annoy anyone who's got their camera off. Assuming you guys are listening in the background. So what we're going to touch on, we went through, most of you will remember some of it. So 2 weeks ago, I kind of showed you guys a little bit more about cardiovascular disease. Now, today I wanted to give you guys some really clear takeaways of things that you can add into your lifestyle that will help improve cardiovascular outcomes. But what we're going to do really quick, so for the first 10 minutes, for any of the guys that weren't on the call 2 weeks ago, I'm going to do a brief breakdown of what we spoke about. So I'll spend the first 10, 15 minutes. It took me about 40 minutes last time. I'll spend the first 10 to 15 minutes just going over briefly what we did on the last call. And then I'm going to give you guys clear takeaways and really actionable items that you can use starting tomorrow to help improve cardiovascular health and prevent cardiovascular disease. Now let me pull up for you guys what we're going to do. Get your notepad out, Lewis. You better be ready. So this, outside of gut health, cardiovascular disease is probably my favorite subject. I think when you look at it, it's so multifaceted. And people always look at cardiovascular disease as this like real central problem. Like they always associate heart, veins, arteries, that's it. What people fail to recognize that the cardiovascular system accompanies all the other organ systems. Because if you consider the amount of blood flow that we need to every single area, whether that's the brain, the heart, the kidneys, the gut, they all encompass the cardiovascular disease. So generally, when we see cardiovascular system fail, we tend to see the rest of the organs fail in some capacity. It's why when people get to end stage cardiovascular disease, we start to see issues with blood pressure. Then we start to see issues with kidneys. Then we start to see issues with brain function. Then we start to see issues with gut function. So looking at it as just one central mechanism is a little bit minimalistic. So we're going to touch on a little bit of what we went through last week, and then I'll give you guys the key takeaways. If you guys have any questions, and I'll be asking you guys questions throughout this, stop me or chuck the question in the chat. We'll talk about what cardiovascular disease actually is. So we'll do a recap. We'll talk about how coronary calcium actually accumulates. We'll talk about some of the unknown factors. And then at the end, we'll talk about how we correct it. So correcting cardiovascular disease is multi-mechanistic, and it can be at least arrested in its development. So if you know somebody or you currently know you have some of these issues with cardiovascular disease, understanding that you may not be able to reverse something like calcification of the arteries, but you can definitely arrest or slow down its progression dramatically. So I always explain to people who come to me with quite an elevated level of coronary calcium, the goal for you is to die with it, not of it. And there you can go. It's basically broken down into four different entities. So you can talk to like coronary heart disease, cerebrovascular disease, which tends to be associated with the brain, peripheral arterial disease, which tends to be associated with what she says with the periphery, so the lower legs, and aortic atherosclerosis, which is what we tend to associate with in the calcification of the arteries. And I love this phrase, a man is only as old as his arteries. Now, I went through these in way more detail last week. These are all of the things that can lead into issues around the cardiovascular system. So whether that's the balance between omega-3s and omega-6s, inflammation, lipid particles, hormone deficiencies, high blood pressure, oxidative stress, all these different factors can all lead into increase in calcification within your arteries and narrowing of those arteries. So finding where you are and what your major problem is of the utmost importance when you try to assess someone who struggles with cardiovascular disease. Now, it is still, I know this is from 2016, and I think it's lowered slightly, and cancer death, I'm sure, has increased slightly, but you can still see it doubles the death rate in terms of cancer, and dramatically multiple times higher than the rest of the other serious diseases that tend to kill us. So when we look at this, especially for males, it's really important that we notice that this is most likely what's going to kill us. And we need to make sure that we're on top of this. And don't get me wrong, we have to die from something eventually, but let it be a long time in the future. Now, how does plaque actually accumulate? It's an important factor to think about, because we all hear about like just the LDL model. So LDL or low density lipoproteins play a big role. So, but there has to be an initial injury in order for this to happen. So really simply, LDL floats through our bloodstream like cars on a road. When we have barriers either side of that, we can either have too many cars on the road and eventually they cause damage to the barrier, or we can have other things that damage the barrier, allowing these cars to get in between the barrier and behind it. And the things that tend to damage the endothelial lining are things like blood pressure, dyslipidemia, high triglycerides, cigarette smoking, diabetes. Then you get into some of the fancier stuff, like heavy metals can do it, environmental toxins. But when they get behind this lining and in behind to the lumen in behind, then the immune system responds. When it can't clear it effectively, we get buildup of these foam cells, and then they grow this fibrous cap. And that's what starts to thin our arteries so the blood flow can't get through it, or the cars can't drive along it effectively. So it's a simplistic model when people talk about LDL, but LDL definitely plays a role in this. So for you guys that have elevated levels of LDL in the blood test, sheer number is a problem, but it's not the instigator in the most part, unless it's extremely elevated. It's something else that tends to cause this damage first. Now, went through this with you guys last time. You guys should know your blood pressure by now. And then we can look at something like when we generally think of as what's called like the web of cardiovascular disease. So what are the major things that lead into cardiovascular dysfunction? And gut health plays a role. Mitochondria and energy production plays a role. Every disease, or not every, the vast majority of disease centrally has a mitochondrial problem. So our ability to produce energy, I did this chat while we were in Tampa at the weekend. I kind of mentioned to everybody, who doesn't want more energy, right? So one thing you can ask anybody and they'll say yes. And you can talk about like all the things that affect mitochondrial function, and it's wide and it's vast, but it does seem to sit centrally. Thyroid can be an issue because thyroid or thyroid hormone is responsible for the reuptake of cholesterol at the liver. And then we can have all sorts of issues. We can have problems with fat cells that can cause major problems. What is the issue with homocysteine? I didn't touch, did I mention homocysteine? No. So you guys have probably heard of, like, people talk about methylation a lot that we see online. Methylation is just a cycle, right? But we use these things called methyl groups, and you pass them around the body and they perform all these other actions. Like, methyl groups will help create creatine or phosphatidylcholine or the neurotransmitters in our brain. It's also responsible for our production of glutathione, which is our master antioxidant, and stuff like nitric oxide. Now, when we have problems in that cycle, the thing that tends to build up is called homocysteine. It's a byproduct of methylation. And people, it's for most people, it's a genetic problem, not all. So when homocysteine starts to increase, you can think of it slightly more complex than this, but homocysteine in the bloodstream is kind of like little shards of glass. So it can increase blood pressure, but it can also cause direct damage to your cardiovascular system. So when people have problems here, you normally need stuff like B vitamins, glycine, and these things can help take homocysteine and recycle it around and around and again to keep creating these really cool methyl groups that can be used for all these different processes. It's one thing that I find really difficult to explain, actually, methylation. It's a little bit complex, but there's a good idea, because I know for you, you had elevated homocysteine, which was a genetic problem. And we used generally like B vitamins and stuff like that to try and help lower it. And then some of the lesser known stuff we spoke about. So like genetics can play a role. Circadian rhythm's massive. I spoke about this in terms of mitochondria as well. So for you guys who don't sleep adequately, don't emphasize sleep, Seth, and don't do all these other things in regards to going to bed at the same time, waking at the same time as much as possible. Circadian rhythm plays a big role. Dental health, which Vihar is a dentist, I'm sure he'd be really interested to know, whether that be cavities, whether that be just general decay, does play a relative significant role in cardiovascular disease. A lot of this stuff can burrow down, get into the bloodstream, and cause damage. There's also association with dental health and neurodegeneration. And then HCAs is how we cook our food. So if we cook food at really high heat, we produce these things called heterocyclic amines, and they do damage to the cardiovascular system and to our DNA. Now, because I'm not going to touch on this too much when we go to takeaways, sleep is strongly associated with poor cardiovascular outcomes. For you guys, who goes to bed at the same time and wakes at the same time almost every day? Very good. Very good. Who gets 7 to 8 hours of sleep? Right. Okay. So most. Thank you, sir. John, 7 to 8 hours. Seth, so you don't go to bed at the same time, don't wake up at the same time, don't get 8 hours? Is it a priority problem? I know it's many different problems.
Yeah, I think it's just a it needs to be a priority, just life, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Chris Clark says, 6 to 8. Six generally isn't enough. 7 to 8 is where we're trying to hit with this. It seems to like it plays a really big role in autonomic tone. So our perception of stress goes up quite dramatically when we don't sleep adequately. And that involves quality of sleep and length of sleep. So it's a combination of both. So it is just worth noting that, we can have guys in here that sleep for 6 hours and sleep really well for 6 hours, and they might actually be of more benefit than some of you guys sleeping 7, 8 hours, but you're up and down. Whether that's waking up to pee multiple times, whether it's the inability to fall asleep, whatever, whether it's a bunch of alcohol. I don't have the genes that allow less sleep. I don't, someone might correct me on this. I don't think there's a gene that's associated with that very well. I think there's only a very, very select few people in the population who actually can get away with a Nazi for performance detriment, performance drop when they get less than adequate sleep. Okay. Oh. There we go. Apologies. So we'll talk about exercise a little bit more when we get to the takeaways. But aerobic exercise has been shown to be extremely beneficial for NO production. So this is one of the major things that I would give to a client if blood pressure is elevated. Aerobic work has huge benefits in producing nitric oxide. And I don't touch on nitric oxide just in of itself throughout this, but nitric oxide is what you guys will like what most people think of as it increases vasodilation. So it opens up our blood vessels to allow blood flow to be able to flow more freely. And when we use something like aerobic work, it is the amount of volume that we do, unfortunately. When we think about weightlifting, we consider intensity for the most part. It's like how hard do we have to work with the least amount of volume to get what we want? Whereas when we think about aerobic work, it's like how much can you do? How much time can you spend on a bike over the space of a week will tend to yield the best benefits. And when we talk about like, actually, I'll touch on that when we get onto the blood pressure section on the takeaways. Weightlifting also has been shown to increase or to improve longevity in these circumstances as well, not as potently. And then our stress perception. Massive. So chronic stress is potential suspect zero for atherosclerosis. I did love this paper. And then I know we discussed this. Those of you who perceive loneliness have really poor health outcomes. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be on your own, but even the perception of loneliness has a huge negative outcome. It's a higher predictor of health outcomes than drinking or smoking. And I thought that was crazy when I saw the thing about smoking. and I'm not going to touch on this too much, but the lifestyle factors that need to be taken into consideration, whether it's toxic chemicals, pesticides, plastics, pollution, cleaning products, radiation, recreational drugs, all these things are chemicals that we can get exposed to that can affect our cardiovascular system. And then there was like, then I just touched on which part of this do you need to work on? So for some people, it is the real low-hanging fruit that they actually need to emphasize. It's normally stress reduction. It's normally improvements in sleep. And you can see certain things like even it's finding a tribe. I almost hate that phrase, but finding your tribe or your people so that loneliness is not a major thing. When we perceive loneliness, the body prepares for infection. And when the body prepares for infection, it creates this low-grade systemic inflammation in preparation for a cut, a bite, or whatever it might be, because it perceives loneliness that no one is there to help it. Comparably, then if we're part of a tribe, we tend to build up defenses to fight viruses because they're passed from person to person. And that is not as much of a heightened immune response. I think I discussed this with most of you last week. For any of you guys who weren't on the call last week, just chuck it in the chat. Do you guys know what your coronary calcium score is? Have you ever had it done? So coronary calcium score is just a marker of the calcification of your arteries. And it's a really, really simple, I say simple. In the States, it's relatively cheap, but is a very effective... Jared, nope, never got it done. Is a really, really effective test to know if your elevated LDL is causing any damage. Now, there's what's called a, I think it's called a Lively score. So there's slightly more advanced versions of it now, 43 or 60, Seth put in. I know, like, this can be reversed slightly. I'll touch on some of the supplements that have been shown. There you go. You can get your primary care to prescribe it. Cost me about $125. Thanks for that, Seth. Yeah, like if I want to pay for this in the UK, it's like £600, $800-ish. And you guys in the States can get it really cheaply. For any of you guys over 40, really, really useful thing to know how aggressive you need to be in your approach if you have any of these risk factors associated with cardiovascular disease. And there you can see, like, well, like, there's the scores. Realistically, you want zero. That's the goal. But you can find out where you are on here. And then the goal is if you're, like, set to put down 43 to 60, if you're somewhere around there, the goal is to reverse it slightly if we can, or just maintain that for the rest of the life. So he'll stay in the mild range ongoing. Now, I'm not going to touch too much on genetics today. We went through like ApoE, which is associated with cardiovascular disease, but also cardiac disease. Cardiovascular disease is associated with neurodegeneration. Lp little a, strong associations for cardiovascular disease, attaches to all your LDLs and makes them susceptible to rust, I guess is the best way to put it with that. And this is what you were talking about, Lewis, when you asked about homocysteine. This is the MTHFR gene. And yes, you're all looking at that like it says motherfucker. It's generally what people call it, the motherfucker gene, and is associated with like elevated blood pressure, cardiovascular risk. It's associated with mood disorders and depression. It's also associated with poor DNA repair. PSRC1 increases total cholesterol overall. And then finally, ENOS. This is endothelial nitric oxide synthase. So this is the enzyme that increases nitric oxide. So there you go. Load. So that is the recap from last week. I know I went through that really quickly. I just wanted to kind of get people on a really similar page. If you weren't on the call, I think I did it 3 weeks ago. But now I kind of want to give you guys what are really clear outcomes. Quickly, what, before we move on, chuck in the chat, what do you guys think is the 1/2 major things that you need to look at in regards to what you're missing from your plan based on cardiovascular disease? Stress, sleep, gut health, loneliness, hypertension. Sleep. Everybody else? Stress. Yep, and it, but also remember, stress is very much perception. And what I mean by that, that doesn't mean that it's not real. Gut health and fat loss, sleep, hypertension, probably overlap there, Paul. Get better sleep, hormone balance and sleep. Nice. So back to the stress thing. Stress is both either psychological or physiological, but they're interwoven very much so. So you correct a lot of the any physiological problems you have, like if you had, just throwing out random stuff here, if you had high blood pressure, fatty liver disease, right? 30% of the population has it. If you reverse those, you'll remove some of the physiological stress. So now your ability, or your ability to be able to tolerate stress, dramatically goes up. If you learn how to meditate, if you learn how to do breath work, if you get adequate sleep, then you remove some of the external stress, psychological stress, that also makes you more resilient to it. So there's two ways to dealing with stress. There's lowering the burden, and there's actually becoming more stress resilient, whether that's through training or whatever other capacities there is. So that's just worth noting, because I think I mentioned this when I was in, and I say it quite regularly, I hate using the word stress with people, because it almost seems like a cop-out, right? It's like, oh, I've got this really serious problem. Why is it occurring? It's like, well, stress could be part of it. It's like, yeah, stress is part of everything. But for all of us, especially muscle intelligence, because we all work so hard and train, and a lot of us have families, well, stress burden is really high. So finding ways to deal with that is really appropriate. Now, these are the things I want to give you takeaways for. So I think, outside of genetics, right, these are all the major triggers for cardiovascular disease. Not all, most, right? And some of them overlap, but we can be really specific and target them in particular if we think that it's playing a role. So, like, for you guys with blood pressure issues, and just for reference, anybody with a systolic number above 120 within reason, I would regard as problematic. So for every 5 years, every 10 points that systolic number goes above 120, we lose 5 to 7.5 years of our lives. So it's significant. There's lots of ways, like nutritionally, we can target this. Like, fiber will lower blood pressure, meditation will lower blood pressure, and adequate sleep. But I want to give you the kind of simple things that you guys can use to take away. And two easiest ones that I find, and I often use with clients, is hibiscus tea and pomegranate juice. I touched on it last week, but it's so, so effective at lowering blood pressure. 250 milliliters. I don't know what that is in ounces for you Yanks, but it's really small amount of pomegranate juice. I think that's how you spell granite. Pomegranate juice. Anyway, has been shown to lower blood pressure systolic number by about 6 or 7, and so is high dose or high strength hibiscus tea. So there are two things I always put into people's blood pressure lowering protocols. Really effective. And I have one client, he's an ex bodybuilder, and his blood pressure was 140 over 90. We used loads of modalities. We didn't concentrate on blood pressure initially. I can't remember why. Because I thought fixing his gut health would solve his blood pressure. It didn't. And I gave him pomegranate juice, hibiscus tea, and cardio. That was it. And his blood pressure dropped within 3 weeks to gold standard. Now, I don't normally see it that happened that quickly, and it could have been predominantly the cardio that did the job. But I just thought it's really significant that these things can play around so quickly with those numbers. And then some of the other stuff, like CoQ10, for anyone who's taken statins, CoQ10 can be particularly useful as well as an adjunct. And CoQ10 is used for energy production. And it has been shown to drop blood pressure in the vast majority of the people that use it. The other two, so pycnogenol and natokinase. Natokinase with pomegranate and omega-3 are the only supplements that have been shown, nanokinase being the most potent, to significantly regress coronary calcium buildup. I think I mentioned this on the call a few weeks ago. If they did, they did the study on 2,000 to 3,000 Japanese patients who had mild to moderate calcification of their arteries. They gave them nattokinase over the space of a year with no other intervention, nothing, no exercise, no dietary advice. And I can't remember the averages, but on average, coronary calcium dropped in that group. Statins can't do that. If this was a medication, we all would have heard about it by now. It would have been front page news. Nattokinase is really potent, but it's also really, really good at lowering blood pressure. What it does is it helps almost thin the blood for us. So it's really, really effective in that way. So nattokinase is a huge win. The only thing I will say, some people will get digestive dysfunction with it as well. Now, pycnogenol is from French pine bark and also been shown to keep nitric oxide around for longer, also been shown to be effective at, also been shown to be effective at, with something called Gotu Kola, been shown to stop the progression of cardiovascular disease or coronary calcification just by itself in research, so without any other intervention. So these kind of things can be really effective for blood pressure, and worth noting. So like Paul, I would trial, if you have elevated blood pressure now, just try these three. So get organic pomegranate juice. There's one, there's a good one from Costco. I'll send you the link that can be used. 250 milliliter a day, high strength hibiscus tea twice a day, and regular cardio work, and see if your blood pressure drops. I'd be very rare, especially in a guy your age, that it wouldn't. Now, inflammation is one of these buzzwords that we hear. And I'm not going to go into in super detail what inflammation actually is, but we can think about it in two ways. There's these things called DAMPs or PAMPs. So I'll say it quickly, damage-associated molecular pattern, pathogen-associated molecular pattern. But you only need to take into consideration the first letters. So damage or pathogen, pathogen being bacteria or virus. These are the only two ways, these are the predominant two ways in which the immune system responds, and that causes inflammation. So if we've got an imbalance of bacteria in our gut, if we have high blood sugar, if we have physical trauma, or if we train really excessively, we can create a lot of inflammation, and this can wreak havoc on our cardiovascular system. And these are some of the things that you guys can take into consideration. Curcumin, boswellia, ginger are the most potent. When we get clients who need to do lots and lots of activity, so whether like they're doing like training for a HYROX or training for a marathon, and they get huge inflammatory responses to training, I'll normally give them high dose curcumin, boswellia, and ginger in one supplement in between training sessions. It's just showing how potent they are. Low sugar, omega-3 works really well here as well. Resveratrol can be useful. Does anybody use any of these supplements? I know most of you will use omega-3. Really worth noting, omega-3 has also been shown in certain studies to reverse coronary calcium. When I think about the supplements that I would just kind of give to anybody, I think I mentioned this in Tampa, omega-3, garlic extract, as long as you can tolerate the breath, kind of with the two most important ones that I would consider. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail, although one of my favorite subjects, gut health, seems to directly play a role in cardiovascular disease. They do find that when they pull apart cadavers and they take out calcified or calcification of their arteries, they find bacteria from their gut within them. So this is called endotoxemia, where the bacteria from the gut makes it into the bloodstream. For the guys in muscle intelligence, for the majority of you, I'm sick of saying it, you all suck with fiber intake. Fiber plays a huge role in overall health. But thinking about fiber, because it creates butyrate, digestive enzymes or digestive capacity can be useful. Colostrum, avoidance of alcohol, and adequate training and movement all play really big roles in gut health. I could spend a long time speaking about gut health, but then things to take into consideration at base level. Oxidative stress. Oxidative stress, we all hear about antioxidants, right? So we hear, oh, we need to take this antioxidant for health, but what does it actually do? We have, when we produce energy, we have this kind of byproduct that we produce from it called not a hydroxyl radical, superoxide. A superoxide anion, doesn't matter. But there's this kind of like rusting that occurs when we produce energy. And in small amounts is really appropriate because it acts to like a signaling molecule to the body. But when this accumulates too much, either through eating too much food or, again, not getting enough sleep or being overstressed, we produce an overabundance of this rust that goes on in the body. Damages our mitochondria. We don't produce energy effectively anymore. But some of the stuff that's been shown to be really effective against this are the standards, like vitamin E, vitamin C. Astaxanthin has been shown to be really effective for eye health as an antioxidant. NAC, glutathione, glycine, these kind of things can be really useful. But I would say for most of you is increasing total polyphenol intake. Polyphenols are what give fruit and vegetables their pigment. I think anytime I ask people, what vegetables do you eat? They tend to consume a handful of different vegetables, fruits and vegetables that they like. What I love from guys is to dramatically expand out the amount of vegetables that you're consuming. So whether it's you making stir fries or you just adding a different type of vegetable each week that you don't particularly like, but you will, they always think of like the 6 exposure rule. Normally, for most vegetables, if you eat them enough times in a row, you will learn to like them. So I say for guys, like if you're worried about like oxidative stress, inflammation, any of these buzzwords that we hear, dramatically expanding out the amount of vegetables that you eat. Berries play a big role. Fruit does play a role as well, but predominantly vegetables. Just out of interest, guys, anybody ever like weighed the amount of fruit and vegetables they consume in a day? Yay, nay. I'm going to go with no. You guys should be consuming, if you think, vegetables and berries. Let's put it that way, because I know we could all sit like with a honeydew melon and consume a kilo of it in a day if we wanted to. You guys should be consuming 500 grams to a kilogram of vegetables and berries daily. That's generally the target that I like my clients to aim for. That will give you adequate fiber, adequate polyphenols, and all the other really cool things that go along with it. And I guarantee most of you are nowhere near there. So you don't have to get there straight away, but looking to achieve that goal long-term is a really effective way. Does anybody actually use smoothies regularly? If so, also tell me what's in it. Yeah, thanks for that, Seth. Is eating pomegranate the same as the juice? Probably. 8.5 fluid ounces. Thanks, Paul. So most likely it's the same, but it's just the research is actually old on pomegranate juice, but that's what they used in it. So I just generally say the juice just because I know it works, but I imagine the same thing will do. For natokinase, yeah, you can use the Designs for Health natoserozyme. It has natokinase and serokinase in it as well, will be effective. Now you do want, so Andrew, you want somewhere around 12,000 fibrinolytic units a day. It's the only supplement, not the only, but you really have to take it away from food for it to have its effect. So nobody has smoothies, fine. I would use smoothies as a really, really easy way to increase total fiber and polyphenol intake. So just for context, what I do is I'll use a mixture of berries and then I'll put loads of bland vegetables into it. So like spinach, kale, cucumber, courgette. I can't remember what you guys call courgette again. Someone back me up on this one. Chia seeds, flax seeds can be really useful. And then I'll put stuff like ginger in, and then I'll put eggplant. I've never put eggplant in. Zucchini, thank you, Chris. So zucchini, and I'll generally do that, and then I'll put something that's a little bit more pungent, but like I'll put a little bit of mango or something there to give it flavor, so that it's tolerable. But that's a really easy way to get an extra 5 to 6 portions of fruit and vegetables a day. So I pack them all on a Sunday where I'll create the smoothie with chia and flax seeds in it as well, and I'll just freeze them. So then all I have to do is pull one out every day, let it thaw, and then blend it. And I find that just a really simple way to try and improve total intake. I would love to see if anyone actually tries that this week. I will send a video on Sunday of how I set it up. Then when we look at cholesterol, these tend to be the most potent at lowering it. I always say to people, be wary with using high dose niacin or red yeast extract. Red yeast extract is very similar in its effects to statins, so can lead to some of the same issues in regards to muscle pain. I tend to go garlic extract, bergamot extract, and sometimes niacin to try and lower people's cholesterol. But again, Mediterranean style of dieting, lowering total saturated fat intake can play a role as well. And then for any of you guys struggling with blood sugar, these are the supplements that tend to have the best research on them. So like alpha lipoic acid, magnesium, myo-inositol, berberine, and then cardio fiber. Again, can be really effective at lowering blood sugar overall. And then I guess trying to bring it all together at a really basic level. So we tend to cover like these high level things, where I'm like this supplement for this intricate thing. But at a really basic level, appropriate supplementation, lots of fiber, lots of polyphenols, controlling sleep and stress, cardio and nutrient dense whole food will get you 80 to 90% of the way. Then you get into some of the intricacies that people tend to suffer with, whether that's a genetic problem, whether it's a gut problem that you got from, getting deli belly while you traveled once, whatever. But they're some of the real. Yep, you can add protein powder for sure, Lewis. But at a really basic level, that's how you have to look at cardiovascular disease. Now, I know I didn't put in things like protein or weightlifting. Like, don't get me wrong, they play a role. But these are just some of the major things that you guys tend to miss. Time is a 10 to. Okay. Now, do you guys have any questions on anything I went through there? It doesn't necessarily have to be with cardiovascular disease, it can just be in general. I didn't touch on any sort of peptides or anything to do with cardiovascular disease. I just don't see it as appropriate for this one. But if you guys have any questions, I'm all ears. Everybody looks like they're eating good food too.
A question for you.
Go ahead, Mike.
In regards to the blood pressure thing, I remember since I was younger, even like in my teens, I would get it tested and it was always elevated. And then, continuing on, I'm 34 now. I just tested it. It was 120 something over 60 or something like that. It's always seemed to be elevated, does it? So say if you had a higher baseline when you're younger, would that offset anything, or is that still kind of the same type of concern?
Still the same kind of concern, I would say. Now, there can be genetic problems. I went through your genetics with you. I don't think there was a genetic component. I just can't think off the top of my head with you, Mike. But 120 something isn't a big deal. I mean, realistically, all you have to do is get that down to 120. So you could be 5 marks off. So like, I don't necessarily think that's the biggest problem. Now, a lot of the time when people get blood pressure tested, they get like white coat syndrome. So it's just the exposure to someone, like when they go have to go to like a doctor's office and their blood pressure tends to be higher. I would look for you at just testing it relatively consistently. So getting one for home and start tracking it to see the trends in it. And then we can look at making some sort of intervention. So like if you want to try anything that I mentioned there, like I would just go pomegranate juice, hibiscus tea initially to see if you can get it down. But yeah, like track it a little bit and then we can actually go ahead and look at that for you, no problem, if it continues to be a problem.
I did I do it at home. I remember one morning I did it and it was like super early in the morning. It was really elevated and I was like 140 or something. So I retested it and I sat. But I remember when I went and got my blood work done too. That kind of set me off drawing blood, right? So you could be on something with the white coat thing, right? Could just be myself getting myself fired up about it, right?
Well, it can also be the travel to there, right? Because we're going to have higher blood pressure throughout the day than we would first thing in the morning. So like you traveling, you get stuck in traffic, you can't find a parking space, you have to queue, blah, blah, blah. All these things can elevate a blood pressure. So I always say to people, like, consistent tracking is really appropriate. So whether you do it first thing in the morning or last thing at night and just consistently doing it there, you'll always have slightly off ones. But yeah, like so I would look at consistency for a little bit to get a true representation of where your blood pressure is. I went in for a procedure 5 weeks ago and I was nervous about it. And my blood pressure was 160 over 90 before I went in. And then they did it again after and I was 115 over 62 or something like that. So we can just show the, like how the discrepancies can be throughout the day.
All right. Good. Thank you.
No problem. Everyone says flax seeds, right? Flax seeds for a no-no for men in regards to like what? There's always the talk of the drop in testosterone and stuff like that associated with flax and all that. No, it's similar when people talk about like soy. Like, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't be too interested in nailing down a bunch of soy milk or anything like that. But like you talk about like tempeh or tofu and all these things, they don't lower testosterone. And if they do, some of them, it's really transient. So I give flax seeds to a lot of clients. If it's because it's an effective way to increase fiber intake. How about peptides and collagen? So are you Lewis, are you, I was going to say Louis, like we was talking about earlier. Apologies. How about peptides for collagen, do you mean? You're on mute, brother.
Yeah, sorry, I couldn't get off it. Wasn't working on the screen. Now I was talking about like both collagens and like the peptide, supplementation kind of thing, adding that to basically a smoothie, that kind of thing. Is that does it increase or decrease the effectiveness of the fruits and vegetables?
No, it's fine. No, I wouldn't worry too much about that. It's
And then
absolutely
the other
fine.
thing was the NAC. Like, is there any way to get that other than just supplementing?
That's actually a really good question, and I'm gonna cheat in the background. I don't think you can get NAC from diet. But
Well, I
I'm gonna be
didn't
really ch I'm
want
gonna be really cheeky.
to.
No. You can't get it directly from food. It's
Okay.
synthetic. Thank
Okay.
you. Yeah,
Thank
I
you.
wasn't sure. Okay. Remind me of having a venti. So, Jared, yeah, role of hydration and caffeine. So hydration will increase blood volume. So it will generally, it tends to lower blood pressure. However, caffeine for some can increase blood pressure. Not for everybody though. So most people tolerate caffeine just fine. It's like the sodium question, right? Does salt increase blood pressure? Not for most people. For most healthy people, sodium is relatively healthy up to a point. That's the same for caffeine. Now, you can see, like, if you track your heart rate, some people break down caffeine really ineffectively, and that can lead to increased heart rate or blood pressure with excessive amounts of it. Anybody else, gents, got anything they want to say or ask? No, we good? All right, boys. Thanks again. Much love to all. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll speak to you all soon. Thanks, guys.